Hello, and welcome to Misspoken, a lady-centric live lit show featuring writers, performers, comedians, essayists, and bloggers exploring a new theme each month. This is Jasmine Davila, and I host the show with Rosamund Lannan. The following is a recording of our July 27th show at the Gallery Cabaret, the theme of which was Catcall. Our readers for this show were Ola Follati, Karen Clanton, Megan Henricks, and Lily B.
Hello!
Shit, I was going somewhere with this. All right. How many people in the audience have been catcalled? Raise your hand. Yeah, all right. Dave, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, on the count of three, share the most memorable catcall you've ever had.
Essays by female identifying writers. We are your hosts, Jasmine Davila and Rosamund Lannan.
You can find us here on the last Wednesday of the month here at the Gallery Cabaret in Bucktown. Each show we take on a new and exciting theme. If you can't tell by those vaguely Sex and the City intro questions, right, who watched TV in the early 2000s? This month's theme is
Catcall.
Let's get started.
Our first reader, Ola Follati, is a Chicago native who loves her city. When she's not at work supporting 826 Shy's young writers, Ola likes to eat sweet things and jot down things she overhears on public transit. Her writing has appeared in Rust Belt Chicago, an anthology, The Harpoon Review, Punch Ticket, and elsewhere. Ola?
Hi!
Hello!
Okay, I'm just gonna get started. This doesn't have a title, but I would say it's a coming of age story of sorts through catcalling, obviously. Before Borders Bookstore went out of business, the one in Uptown was my go-to hangout to get lost reading YA fiction on a wooden ledge overlooking the neighborhood. No one in sight to disturb me. As I was about to leave the store one night, the books in the entryway caught my eye, and at the same time, a man exiting stopped to compliment my red coat. We started talking about weather and how he was from Florida and how brutal Chicago can be for 6 months out of the year. I found his interest in conversation strange, noting the smattering of gray on his head and beard. He wore an army green coat and reminded me of a younger Morgan Freeman. I shouldn't have been surprised when he asked how old I was. The whole time we talked, I felt how he looked at me with more than just friendliness. I'm 15. 15? Oh, my. He looked embarrassed. I thought, you just looked older. I'm sorry. He walked out of the Borders flustered, and later that night, I looked in my bathroom mirror at my bumpy forehead and box braids, and I thought, I can't possibly look that old. That same year, outside the Wilson train station, there was a guy working for Liberty Tax. Sometimes he had an accomplice, a woman on the opposite side of the street, dressed as Lady Liberty, holding a big red and white sign. The man would see me leave the Wilson station with my backpack on, looking every minute of what, 16, maximum? I never found out how old he thought I was. Just that he always wanted to strike up a conversation with backpack-wearing, crooked pigtail-having me. Always wanted to ask how school was going, and I humored him. Or I was intimidated, and I didn't know how to tell this grown man, not much taller than me and wearing wire rimmed glasses, that I didn't want to talk, that his intrusive questioning made me squirm. One day, taxman asked for my name before propositioning me on a date. I'm just saying, Ola, give me a chance. Think about it. I walked off, not flattered and mostly frightened. I went to bed with all the worst case scenarios playing out in my head. What if this dude was a stalker? Should I start boarding at Lawrence instead? Is he gonna ask me out on a date every time I fucking see him? But nothing ever came to fruition. The man saw me from time to time, hurrying to catch the oncoming southbound train. Sometimes he waved. We never spoke again. That same year, in December, I caught a stomach bug from my school cafeteria. All I remember is putting hot sauce on pizza, but the rest of the afternoon I could hardly focus, feeling the half-digested food waiting to launch itself out of my stomach. I rode the train home, miserable. When I got on at Clark and Division, I happened to make eye contact with a man sitting diagonally from me. He looked in his 40s, hair was cropped in a buzz cut with the sides tapered off. His eyes lingered a little too long on mine, so I looked away. But the whole 20-minute train ride, as I struggled to keep food in my stomach, I could feel his gaze. He mouthed seemingly dirty things and puckered his thick lips in my direction. As I got off the train, he waved like we were old friends. Bye, baby. Like an idiot, I waved back awkwardly, truly like an idiot, but whatever, I was young and dumb. I got home and eventually threw up, then spent the rest of the night watching Bad Girls Club. I was 16, going on 17, summer, coming home from the adolescent clinic after getting my first HPV shot. When I crossed the street, another man crossed with me. I recognized him from around the neighborhood. He always wore a baseball cap with baggy white t-shirts and sold DVDs in front of the convenience store, probably other things too. I never asked. He said hello, and politeness for me is a hard, ingrained reflex, so I said hello back. I've seen you around. You're very pretty. Thanks. I wondered how long I'd have to put up with him walking next to me. You probably get this a lot, but I can take you out, show you what these other cats can't show you. I said no, ooh, not ooh, at all. He was gross. I said I wasn't interested. I said I didn't like meeting random people off the street. Well, where else do you expect to meet people? I shrugged without an answer. I wasn't trying to meet anyone. How old are you? I told him, and he nodded. I thought so, 16 or 17. He didn't look a day younger than 35. There are reasons for everything. There are reasons I steel myself when I pass a group of men on a street corner. There are reasons I rarely make prolonged eye contact with men on public transit. I am distrustful. When you're a young woman in a big city, you have to be. It was always older guys. Dad aged older. I learned to look ahead and keep it moving, maybe add an uninterested or disinterested thank you if and only if I was paid a nice compliment. A few months ago, it was the perfect weather outside, one of those handful of beautiful days Chicago gives us in April. I was leaving the Aldi in my neighborhood, and a man panhandling outside the automatic doors called after me. Miss, miss, can I just tell you something, miss? I kept walking. He ran to catch up to me and stood in front of me, all in my face so I could see his buck teeth and glazed eyes as he said, I just want to say you look real nice today, miss. You have a nice day. He gave me a long and slow once over, and I moved past him across the street, ready to tell him to back the fuck up, and I almost did, thinking he was following me. When I turned my head, he was at the same spot I left him. I was wearing a striped t-shirt, loose black pants, and heeled sandals. Not scandalous or revealing by my standards. The days get warmer and shameless men make themselves more known, but I try to remember that the sun is meant for my skin. that I can let its rays soak into my skin until I go inside seeing stars, and that I have the freedom to show off my body as I feel fit. No one will take that from me. If you're a woman, you know it doesn't matter what you wear. If you're a girl, you learn it doesn't matter what you wear, because if you look grown enough, any man will want something from you. And if you don't look grown enough, some men prefer it. I don't know what I would have said to a young teenage me. Perhaps, good job for not taking those creeps seriously. Good job for sensing the predators. Because not every girl senses. And that's the scariest thing of all. Thank you.
Next up, we have Karen Clanton, who is an attorney whose law degree did not stifle the English major lurking within, just burst out of her chest like an alien. That wasn't her bio, I added that. She has spent her career as a writer in the legal profession, where she develops internal communication strategy for a major law firm. Karen is a single mom living on the south side of Chicago, chronicling her adventures through stories that can be heard at open mics around the city. Give it up for Karen.
It was just my luck that during my son's first grade class trip to the Shedd Aquarium, the famed beluga whales were horny. I was a chaperone, and with the teachers and the other chaperones, we corralled all the first graders in front of the big tank. Look at the whale's children. We're all in awe. The belugas twist and play and flash their brilliance in front of us. Then one of them heads directly to us. It flips. And then it shimmies up to the glass and reveals a stunning up close and personal look at its heart on. It was a whale of a number. The adults gasped in unison and quickly ushered the children to the next exhibit featuring the penguin. What I thought was a whale play date was really a mating dance. And Mr. Whale continued to duck, dodge, and chase the female beluga while his members stood erect. But listen, I understand Mr. Whale's plight. Sex is a need, and it could rear its head at the most inopportune time, space, and circumstance. In fact, it continued to do so on this very same field trip. Now, when you become a veteran of field trips, you get to see, meet, and know other parents, grandparents, aunts, and uncles who are pressed into duty on a day off from work to shepherd a bunch of children through a massive place full of things they could see and not touch, while being mindful of skirmishes, bathroom breaks, disciplinary needs, and strange habits of other people's kids. Now, one child, I call her Little Princess, she required her own one-on-one chaperone. Little Princess is the epitome of girliness. I mean, she was full of pink and turquoise glittery things. She had she sported elaborately arranged pigtails of her own hair, and she blinked pretty little doe eyes. Little Princess's grandmother was set to take her, but something happened. She couldn't make it, so grandmother called in Mother. Now, Mother's tall, slim, shapely. Her weave extends down to the back of her, to the middle of her back. Her nails look like immaculately groomed claws that glitter with rhinestones. They generate flashes of light as she, clicks on her phone, which is in a bejeweled case. Even her Uggs have rhinestones. Now, she wore tight pants, short quilted jacket. Everything's designed to display her figure, which is where the eye lingers until you get to her face, which is dominated by mink-trimmed, extra-long lashes and lips that look enshrined in glass. Unlike the other parents, she didn't look like she took off from work. She looked like she had just gotten off from work. work that might have involved a pole, a G-string with rhinestones, of course, and cat calls aplenty. This is entirely possible, because it turns out the little princess's father owns an unassuming building on a major street in a residential area that is home to a well-known but totally unadvertised strip club. Mother certainly hailed from that life. One could surmise by her demeanor that she and father lived in a world where sex was heavily marketed, if not for sale. And one must wonder whether the poorly behaved little princess was the result of some calculation between the strip club owner and the stripper about security, value, status, and exchange. Sex can be a commodity. Sex is a universal need felt by animals and humans alike. Sometimes it's a commodity. Yet it's many other things too, like the antidote to being alone. Now, recently, I survived a bout of celibacy. After the death of my long-term boyfriend, I tippy-toed into the dating waters and found them to be quite treacherous indeed. So, I decided to bifurcate the need. I'll seek a loving, caring relationship on the one hand, but take care of sex first, and on the other hand. In my pursuit, I learned that a catcall comes in many different forms, and it can be downright sexy if done right. I seen Mr. Around and felt a spark when our paths crossed, but I disregarded it. One day he dropped his business card in my bag in some slick fashion that made me chuckle. I didn't retrieve it, but I was conscious of its presence there, kind of liked its presence there, and carried it around for a while. And then one day, I called just to see. And who knew that a cat call could be a tip of the head, peek up my skirt, and discreet whisper in my ear about how pretty the inside of my thighs look. Who knew a cat call could be a request for my panties now in this public space, just so he could have them in his pocket while he worked? Who knew that these intimate observations and outlandish requests would seem reasonable and worth serious consideration, when at other times and with other people, they would have garnered a slap in the face? It's all in how it's delivered. And he delivered in a smooth, ballroom stepper, colorful suit wearing, confident kind of way. At the aquarium, everything's choreographed. The animals exist in perfectly proportioned tanks, and they've been trained to elicit squeals from visitors, often grade school children. Yet on this day, sex showed up in a spontaneous and uncontrollable way, just like it does in life. There are many facets to this essential need. Often we're trained to think of it or accept it or structure it in one particular way. In my case, I was trained to think of it as part of a loving relationship, but you find yourself at certain stages of life where sex becomes something else altogether. It becomes a way to attain security or a way not to be alone. We may structure our lives to reflect what we think sex should be and the way that the aquarium replicates environments that the animals should live in. But in both cases, it's merely an approximation of truly living in the wild. Thank you.
Our next reader, my co-host, the product of 9 years in San Francisco and 8 years in St. Paul, Rosamund Lannon is pleasantly surprised to have lived in Chicago for over a decade. During that time, she has been published by internet periodicals, performed stories around the city, and consumed many carne asada burritos. These days, she's pretty into speculative fiction, co-hosting Lady Livelet's show, Unspoken, and trying to write essays that make you feel things, think things, or at the very least laugh.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my cousin Willa and I are hanging out for the first time as adults. We're sitting side by side in some restaurant that specializes in craft cocktails, aka every third restaurant in this neighborhood. And Willa is visiting, and it's like gone surprisingly well. The last time I saw her, she was 16 and I was 26. And that like age gap was kind of big and weird and kind of hard to get over. But now she's 22 and I'm 32. And she's breaking my heart by telling me she thinks that the Me Too movement doesn't really matter. She agrees with the concept, of course. We were raised in progressive households, and she's a modern young lady. But she thinks it's not going to go anywhere. She doesn't really think it makes a difference. My heart sinks into my fancy gin fizz and settles somewhere near the bottom of my glass, rubbing gloomily up against a twist of line just next to my hopes for gender equality in our time. She's telling me about something that happened to her and some things that have happened to her friends. And because of these things that happened to her and her friends, she does not believe that any of this talk of Harvey Weinstein and Matt Lauer, and most recently Aziz Ansari, will have any long-term repercussions. I just don't believe it, she says. I mean, after what's happened to me and what's happened to them, I don't know. She shrugs, and my heart breaks a little bit more. We are not close enough that I can probe for detail, but we are close enough that I immediately wish murder on whoever did something to her. I tell her, I'm so sorry that happened, and she nods. I tell her that even 5 or 10 years ago, people did not talk about gender the way they do now, and she looks nonplussed. I tell her that social movements don't happen in a day, and she looks bored. She makes that face, the universal 22-year-old symbol for, I don't really believe you. We order another round of drinks. And I wonder, how can I ask her to believe in a sea change when I don't really know if I believe it myself? How can I tell her it's going to get better, that it's not so bad, when it is really bad a lot of the time? Like a lot of girls, I started getting yelled at in cars before I hit puberty. I'm not going to go into my many experiences because you've probably heard them, and honestly, I'm pretty tired of describing them. Let's just go with the highlights. Someone called me something, someone touched me when I didn't want to be touched, someone otherwise made me uncomfortable. What a shitty and common montage. And I will say, though, it was not until college until I realized that some girls were in on the game, too. So I went to Loyola, and as part of freshman, maybe they'll stop calling me for loans after they hear this, as part of freshman orientation, we had a meeting about sexual harassment. It was held in the lobby of our dorm. Students lounged on couches as a hapless speaker talked about alcohol and choices and making good decisions. There was no talk of consent. The speaker was greeted by laughter and howls of derision, which was bad enough. But the girl I heard the loudest was a blonde girl in a white tank top who smirked as she draped a tan limb across the back of a fake leather armchair. Her voice was soft and confidential, like she was letting us in on a secret that we all already knew. I mean, you just don't know. Some girls will say anything. Nods all around. More hooting, more yelling, and then we were blissfully allowed to return to our rooms. Jump forward a decade and more, time enough for a million more experiences. Having your ass grabbed as a 10-year-old becomes the guy who takes it a little too far when you're drunk, the client who snaps his fingers at waitresses, the guy in the street telling you he's going to hit that pussy and calls you an ugly bitch when you don't respond. The abuse builds up on your skin until it's calcified, a decade plus of daily indignities that seem pretty normal, as natural as a train running late or an overcast day. Annoying, an inconvenience to be sure, a sharp flare of humiliation, but what can you do about it? You've just been told it's nature, or at the very least, it's just the way things are. But then, one day, crack open the old internet, and Ashley Judd is talking about Harvey Weinstein, and then there are a lot of women using Tarana Burke's words, and no shit, me too. Every woman you know has experienced sexual violence. I mean, duh. You know this, but yet your eyes tear up as you scroll and scroll, because there's something undeniable about having it all out in the open, like having everything right there. There's something powerful about having something that's considered tacitly acceptable, writ large and unacceptable, suddenly for everyone to see. You read everyone's testimonials, you see more men's names, and you feel kind of knocked on your ass, in a good way for once. You think of a lot of times that were bad, and maybe they didn't have to be bad, and you get really sad for a while, but it is overall kind of an amazing feeling. Even some rando posting on your Facebook page can't bring you down. You read their comment about agreeing to disagree and then block their dumbass. You're sort of dazed that people are talking about a thing you honestly thought no one would ever talk about. You really did think men could get away with anything, and they still pretty much can, but it is a little bit less acceptable. It does not feel good, per se, but it does feel like something. Then you go to a party, and a woman you sort of know, one of your husband's friend's wives, she always seemed nice enough. She works in marketing for the generic brand of a grocery store, which she found weirdly fascinating, like Roundy's chips and stuff like that. She says in a loud voice that it's so sad that Matt Lauer was accused of these things. And you're three drinks in, and you start to say, are you fucking kidding me? He had a fucking button under his desk. That is some supervillain shit. But all you get out is, really? Because your husband is making a beeline to you, and maybe we should lose eyes. I do not know what makes social movements stick. I say that my cousin is a modern young lady, but she is not really. She is one side of a country at a time, a country that goes one step forward, two steps back, rinse and repeat, and rinse and repeat, and you wonder how progress ever gets made. She is as modern as the sorority girl on the couch. She is as modern as the Matt Lauer apologist. Because we are all here in this time. If there's anything 2017 has writ large for me, it's that things are much more horrific and much better than I had ever imagined. Mostly horrific. I do not know if I can tell my cousin that it will get better in a permanent way. Not with a straight face. But I'm old enough to see when something makes some of the tiniest of ripples. I can't tell her honestly that I am not able to go back. Not now. And hopefully that's enough to pull her forward with me. Jasmine Davila. She's appeared at venues small and medium-sized, reading for live-lit shows like Meanwhile, Tuesday Funk, 20 by 2 Chicago, and Funny Haha. You can find her on Instagram and Twitter as @JasmineD. Give it up for Jasmine.
Hello again. Thank you for coming back. Okay. That's how my mother called me, when she needed me. I would turn my head and look for her, look at her, make eye contact, close the distance between us. A reminder to stay close, in sight, and listen to what she said. Get her a sample of teriyaki chicken from the Chinese place in the food court at the mall. Sit right next to her on the bus home so I didn't end up sitting next to a strange man. Make her a to-go plate at the neighbor's party celebrating another birthday, another graduation. The arrival of family members from the Philippines who finally got their visas after years of waiting. Oi, come here. Hurry up. So when my family first moved to Queens in 1984, we lived in a one-room apartment with my grandparents. Seven people in one room for several months. Getting on each other's nerves, crossing boundaries that we didn't even know existed. Then Dad got a job and a line in an apartment. It was on the far side of Brooklyn where Cypress Hills and Woodhaven meet. It was in a two-flat owned by another Filipino family with American-born children. The second floor was occupied, but we could live in the basement just for a little while until we were allowed to go upstairs. The basement wasn't exactly what you would consider finished, but at least there was a washroom where we could pee and wash up under a single light bulb. If we wanted a shower, never a bath because that would take too long, we were allowed to go upstairs to the first floor. Landlord kept the door unlocked, and all we had to do was knock once before letting ourselves in. In the interest of saving time, we would undress in the bathroom, wrap ourselves in towels from Woolworths, and scamper up the stairs. It never occurred to me to ask if I could just wear my regular clothes, strip in the privacy of the bathroom, bathe, then dress, and go back home. Maybe because we knew it wasn't allowed or, you know, wasn't, like, preferred. The landlord had three children of their own, and her own, and a husband. That's 10 people sharing a single bathroom. If I was lucky, the kitchen would be empty and nobody would be home. But I was not lucky very often. I'd almost always bump into someone on my way out, the daughter who was in my class at school, or even worse, her brothers who were older than us. I would run, muttering incoherent apologies as I escaped to the confines of the basement. It was always awkward, and then once it wasn't, not anymore. So once I came out of the bathroom, only to find a couple of men in the kitchen. Men whose names I didn't know. But if they were skating in my landlord's kitchen, the landlord we called Pito, out of gratitude for letting us live in his basement for free, they must have been my Pitos too. Uncles by association, if not by blood. Fellow immigrants, friends of the family on the first floor. And there must have been a party next door, another baby, another graduation. Why else would they be standing in my landlord's kitchen wearing gold chains and rings that did not quite go with their knockoff polo shirts and Dockers? Why else would they stand there and not give me an easy way to get past them? Stare at me, call me by my name, which I do not remember ever telling them. Attempt to summon me with that call, the one that says stop, turn around, come here. I told my parents what happened, and they called me stupid, like I knew they would. They didn't doubt what happened, but clearly I was wrong about intentions, seeing threats where none existed. What would these grown men, my uncles, want with a fat little girl? So I stopped showering. I tried not to play hard to avoid sweating. I washed my hair in the little bathroom sink in the basement, but only for so long because after a while I started to smell. And when I did start showering again, I always made sure it was in the daytime and somebody, preferably female, was home. So catcalling doesn't bother me. It never really did. And maybe because I always got lucky that it never escalated into something physical. Like strangers would yell incoherent words from passing cars or across the street, I could ignore them because they never got close enough. Because I could avoid eye contact, I'd plug in my earphones, and I'd move the fuck on. I remind myself to look unremarkable and unnoticeable. Then a few years ago, I was waiting for the Western bus, southbound the northwest corner of Western and Belmont when the flyover was still there. It was late and I was on my way home. There used to be a bus shelter there. And I was fussing with my headphones and the light was red, and so there were cars idling at the corner. And the first car wasn't a car, but a van. Large, dark, and the passenger window I could tell was rolled down. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw a man hanging out of the window. I took a chance and looked, not at him, but at the traffic light. I could see the bright amber lights of the crosswalk sign across the avenue, counting down until the light went green, the cars would go, and I could start breathing again. And it wasn't more than a few seconds, but it was long enough, enough time for me to freeze, keep my head down, and steel myself. For profanity, ugly language punctuated with some sort of gesture. But when it came, finally, it was soft, familiar. No words at all, just the sound of childhood. Getting my mom her plate, or shivering in the kitchen, waiting nothing, wear nothing but a cheap towel, while these strange uncles stand waiting. Thank you.
For the night, we have Lily B, who's a nanny, carpenter, storyteller, artist, community supporter, educator, and believer in dreams. Booker for any and all of your storytelling needs. Lily, get up here.
I always feel so bad never having anything to read off of. Because that's not how I work. I don't write. Oh, I do write, but I just don't write for my shows. So, I've been taking the summer pretty easy, and so when they sent me an invitation to speak, to share a piece here, I saw the theme and I was like, I will make time for this.
Even if I didn't have it, I didn't
cancel
it.
To do this show, because I'm almost 40, so like in my older years, I love a good catcall only because I have become like the shadiest bitch in my life. right here. Like I have, like 80, oh my gosh. And my boyfriend was just sitting there reminding me of like, the last time you had a cat call, and I was like, oh, I'll totally bring that up on stage. I've been going to the gym, so like I've been working the fuck out. I've lost like 120 pounds, right? And got really like strong, like muscle, like biceps, and like triceps. I got muscles, y'all. So like I'm walking to the gym and this dude is on his porch and I have like my gym gear on, I got my headphones in but not really all the way in because motherfuckers, right? So you just like come on in and I'm walking past this dude's house and he sees me, he's eating some sabritones on his porch and I know he sees me coming and I'm walking like a gym person, like I got my headphones on, my shoulders around, my chest, it's just like I'm just walking and he says to me as I walk by like, damn baby, you look like you could whoop my ass. And my response is like, well, why the fuck are you talking to me then? And he like jumped on this porch, you guys. And he was like, you right, you right. Talking to me then, if I look like I could whoop your ass. So I look forward to these moments of like being red. Like, I love it. I love me a good like, slapback. What do they call it?
Flashback.
Flatback. I love it. I love you to get a flatback on a motherfucker all the time. Especially via text. I mean, now that's where all the cat calling are. I love it. I got just follow me on the internet. You will see all the screenshots. I share them all. But there was a time when that wasn't so easy for me. There was a time where, like, when I was 22, I was sexually assaulted. Wearing a Tommy Hilfiger hoodie and a pair of black jeggings, like walking to get my mom's cigarettes in an alley. I was taken in the car and driven around for 3 hours and basically raped for 3 hours in the backseat of a car, knowing that like my life was over. Like in my head, I had already made peace with the world and because I knew they weren't going to let me go. I seen their faces, and by the skin of my teeth, I got away at a gas station because these motherfuckers stopped for gas. And I share this story with two different endings, one that leaves people kind of in the dark, feeling afraid, and then another one that gives them hope. Just depends on the day, how I want to leave you. But I share that story to be like, it doesn't fucking matter, right? What you're wearing, where you are, how well you know your fucking neighborhood. It can happen to anyone. I share that story. And like, I remember that night and I remember being scared. I remember being scared, not in the car, because in the car, like I said, I made my peace with what was. Like, you know this happens? And you know these motherfuckers, and your son will be okay, your friends will be okay, like everyone will be fine. Just deal with it. I did that. I remember being in the backseat of the car, just crying, being like, this is it? And I remember how scared I was back there, but again, I had made my peace with it in the backseat of that car. Rewind, 6 years prior to that, I'm like 16 years old. And my stepfather, who by this time was not in my life, he had already moved back to Mexico. My stepfather had raised us to like learn the fucking grid. Learn the fucking grid. Learn the Chicago grid. If you're new here, if you live here, if you're born raised here, learn that fucking grid. Started at Madison and State, that's where the fuck it starts. That divides north and south, east and west, and memorize every fucking street, because it's the same. It's the fucking same with the exception of the warp streets, right? Like fucking Milwaukee and Lincoln and fucking Ogden and Grand. Like all the warp streets, learn those too. But for the most part, fucking learn the grid. And he was like, and I was like, okay, got it. And he would like pop quiz us, like, what comes after fucking Augusta? And then we're like, ow! Right? Like, so we're going north. So we fucking know, like, I know the fucking grid, right? And I'm just like, what the fuck? We gotta fucking know this bullshit. And he's just like, it's important. It teaches you the way around the city, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, whatever the fuck, man. But it could be anywhere. He'd be like, I'd just be driving my car, like, I'm going, blah, blah, blah. 100 is that? You know where you're going? Like, yes, I know. 4,000 is fucking Peterson. I know where I'm going, right?
Oh, God.
Ugh, I hated him, but I love him. So I'm leaving my boyfriend's house because my mom worked the second shift, 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. So like, I needed to be back before 11:45, midnight. So right after school, I would go to his house, fuck around, and then come back home on the Kimball bus. I would take Kimball all the way from Belmont to Division. Well, on this day, Mike, my boyfriend, walked me to Kimball, and it was like 11-ish, and so the buses come like every 30 minutes, 40 minutes, and I miss the fucking bus I need to get on to get home, and I'm like, I could walk this faster than it's gonna be to wait for the next bus. And he's like, you sure you can walk it? I'm like, yes. And he's like, well, I can't leave because he's 16 too, so he can't fucking leave his house because his mom works the similar shift at the post office. So he's like, I gotta be home. And I'm like, go home, go home. I will call you when I get there. Because we did not have cell phones. It was just like, I'll call you when I get to my house. And he's like, all right, call me when you get home. And I start walking. I start doing this walk from Belmont to Division. I already know it's going to be a couple. I know, you know, it's Belmont, then Diversity, and then fucking Fullerton, and then Armitage, and then North Avenue, and then Division, and then, you know, my place down the street, Augusta and Kenzie. I'm going to get there. No problem. I'm wearing a hoodie and some like short shorts, and I'm walking and I'm enjoying the walk. It's a nice summer day. My hoodie is open. I got a tank top underneath. Judging by like the fucking on my shirt right now, my titties were about the same size at 16. So I'm walking around like a manga cartoon character. Big old titties, big old feet, big old eyes, everything else small. And I'm walking like I've walked this street a million times in my life. I walk Kimball, it's lit up, it's cool. And about Diversity, which is like the next street, this car pulls up next to me. It's a big old like Chevy, like Bronco, one of these Broncos, right? Pulls up next to me. And it's a dude that's just like, meet up. And I'm like, ugh, whatever. You know, because that's what you do. You just like, you ignore it, because if you ignore it, they'll go away. And he's like, meet up. Get us one ride. You want a ride? And I'm like, no, I'm good. I live right up the street. And like, Diversity's nowhere near where the fuck I live. But up the street, you don't fucking know what up the street is. So I'm like, no, I keep you. I'm telling him I live right here. It's cool. Thank you though. Bye. I keep walking. And he drives off. You hear it. This fucking Bronco drives off. Smoke. And I'm like, all right, cool. And so now I'm walking. And I'm approaching Fullerton. And I hear it again, only this time it's from the other side of the street. And it's just like, yeah, mommy. Which is like, oh, back then, because you call me mommy now, on the corner, I'd be like, bitch, if I was your mama, you would fucking know better. I'd be like, mommy, I'm not your fucking mommy, because I'd fucking wash my mouth out what's up right now. Like, that would be my response to a dude who's like, hey, mommy. And I'm like, ain't no mommy in yours. But back then, I just... Mommy was like this dude, and I was like, ugh. And so I'm like, gay, what? Frustrated that he didn't fucking stop me again on my walk. And he's like, te dejo manejar, I'll let you drive. What the fuck that mean to me? Like, what the fuck does that mean? You letting me drive your truck? What the, like, I'm some car booty ass bitch that just needs to be in a fucking car. I need to be driving. No, like, I don't need to drive your car. No, está bien. It's good. I'm good. Aquí vivo. I live right here. And he responds, ¿dónde? And I'm like, aquí dos cuadradas, here, like, 2-3 blocks. And he's like, de veras, for real. And I'm like, yes, bye. And I keep walking because he's holding up traffic. And he's just like, okay, stop it. And he just like, drives away. And I'm just like, fuck, let me pick up my step now. So I'm like walking because I'm still ways from Augusta and Kedzie. So I'm like, shit. And I'm like, look, it's just like, look, I told him a couple blocks. And in my head, now I'm like, the grid. Now I see the grid. And I'm like, okay, it's building. And then it's Palmer. I'm like, he comes back around. I just tell him, I live on fucking Palmer. And we good, all right. And and I'm walking, and sure enough, I hear it before I fucking hear him. I hear, and now he's like pulled up in front of me, like pulled up. I see him pull up, because now he's gonna wait for me. He ain't gonna let traffic hold him up. And he's easily in his 40s. And I walk, and here he comes. I wait for it, and he's like, no que vivias dos cuadradas. Like, didn't you say you live like two blocks? I said, vivia aquí. I said that I live close, aquí en La Palma, aquí en La Palma vivo. And he stops offering me a ride. Oh, pues ya estás. You're already there. And I'm like, bitch, yeah, bitch. I'm like, why the fuck are you following? But you don't say this. You just like, ugh. And I'm walking, and I put my hands in my pocket, and I'm like, all right, Belden. It's Belden, and then it's Palmer. And I look back, and he's parked on that corner right before Belden. And then he turns the car, and I hear that car fucking turn on. And I'm approaching Palmer. And I'm like, oh, shit. He's going to pull up to make sure I live on fucking Palmer. So I'm like, walk in. And sure enough, he is like now creeping behind me. And another trick my stepfather was like, put your keys in your fucking fingers. You're being ready to fight, and you won't fight. And I carry a bobby pin in your hair without the... I have one in my hair right now like this, which is basically a bobby pin with the rubber tips off that I can stick between my fingers and fight, because I can fight. And I get the bobby pin, and I get my keys, and I put them in my pocket, and I walk. And he is just like creeping behind me. And I feel like I want to fight. Like I want to like make this bitch get out the car and just fight him on the street so that people could be like, help this woman, and then whoop his ass when I tell him what he was doing, because that's what they will do. But I also don't know if anyone's going to be around when that happens, so I don't call it out. I just keep fucking walking. And I get to Palmer, and he slows down and then pulls over at the stop sign on Palmer. And I cross the street and then make a fucking right. And now I'm just like, okay, he seen me turn on Palmer. And then his ass turns on Palmer. And now I'm like, ooh, where do I live? Where the fuck do I live? And I'm acting super cool because I can't look like I fucking am not from Palmer and fucking Kimball. I'm from Palmer and Kimball, so I see, in the distance, 3-4 houses, a black wrought iron fence that has the side gate open. So like now I know they're open, but I could probably go in there just because I know how gates in Chicago are made. Like I can go in there, probably lock it up, look like I got fake keys, and then take my ass in the gangway and then sneak out the back of the alley. I got this plan. I got my escape route. I'm done. And sure enough, he's creeping on Palmer, watching me go to my fucking fake ass apartment. And then I get out the fucking apartment. I get in the apartment, I come out the gate, I close it up. Sure enough, it's got a little latch on it. I do these people solid, close their little latch. And then my bitch ass waves at his ass, like, bye, I'm home. Like, he was like doing me a solid, like doing me the favor of watching me go home, like, bye, thanks. And then I hear his fucking truck drive the fuck off. And I'm walking in the gangway in the back, and as I'm walking back there, my heart is racing like it's never fucking raced before. Because I feel like I almost got kidnapped at that moment. I'm like, fuck this motherfucker, almost. Like, if I wasn't, damn, stepfather, thank you. Like, in my head, all these thoughts are coming on, and I'm like, whew, all right, let's get the fuck out of here. Let's go through this back, and I go out through the fucking back gate. And it's one of these, like, backyards in Chicago that got two gates. It's, I got the one gate, and then it's got another gate to go into the backyard, so I gotta go in that gate. And I'm just like, whew, goddamn, all right, let's go. And I open that gate, and right in my face, fucking Pitbull. Like, right in my face, fucking Pitbull on a fucking chain, like, like right here, you guys, right here. And I kiss it. Like, I was just like, because I love that. Like, I was like, ooh, it's you. It's not that dog out there. It's you. So I was just like, and I was like, bitch, what? And then I went out the back. And as I go out the back, the alley, what I think is a Bronco truck, right? Because I hear, I hear that is a dude starting up one of those fucking bicycles. Aww. And then they shoot in the direction, not my direction, right? They like start shooting, like it's fucking West Side Chicago. So like these kids starting up this bike are like shooting this gun in an alley for some fucking reason, some Chicago ass reason. And what's crazy is that doesn't even faze me. Like, just the minute I see that they're just shooting a gun and starting up a fucking bike and it's not the Bronco, I'm just like, whoo, okay, I'm good, I'm good. And I make that fucking left and take my ass home faster than I've ever taken my ass home. And then I call Mike and tell him all the fuck about it. And he's like, well, good thing you know your fucking streets, Lil. And next time, I'm walking you to fuck home. Thank you.
What are we doing next
month? I don't know. I think I do. Well, okay. So that's our show.
Hello.
Hi.
We're
back. We're back. But it's good. It's good. It's going well.
Okay, got it.
So that's our show. Please join us in thanking today's readers: Ola Follati, Karen Clanton, being here.
You can give yourselves a hand, it's fine.
Okay. If you like what you've heard tonight, if you want to find out more about the show, you can find us online at miss-spoken.com.
Yes, we also have a podcast, which is a recording of the show. You'll be able to hear the show within probably the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But search for Miss Spoken on Stitcher or iTunes. And we are here, like we said before, the last Wednesday of the month, which means we'll be back here on August 29th. And the theme of that show is...
I Sing the Body Electric.
It's going to be great.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Thank you and good night.
Be sure to join us for our next show on Wednesday, August 29th. The theme of that show is I Sing the Body Electric. And thank you for listening. Visit miss-spoken.com for weekly blog posts, information on our next show, and how to get involved.